and you can give me money at any time. Yeah. I take it in bills, electronic coins, crypto,
Bitcoin.
Yeah, dude. He's Iraqi dinars.
Yeah. He's selling legal advice as well.
Mm. Yeah.
What are you saying? $75 for three questions.
Yeah. There's like no that. Discounts. I'm sorry. I'm not discounting this because nobody's discounting my student loans. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I would love to give you free legal advice. And that's one of the most annoying things to ever get. Hey, I got a quick question. Yeah. No, you don't have a quick question. Mm-hmm. It took me 3 years to go to law school. I read 65,000 pages of case law, treatises, books, studied. I took 3 months to study for the bar exam, which took me 2 days. 16 essay questions, was 8 books of at least 4 to 5 pages written. 400 multiple choice questions just to pass the bar so I could answer your damn question. So, no, it's not a quick question. Yeah. It's a very expensive question.
Yeah.
You just want me to answer it for free. And I'll answer it for free. But one day, I will call upon you for a favor.
Yeah.
To return to the Godfather, a favor that I ask upon you.
I ask about my fence line one time, dude.
That's it.
One time. Hey, guys. How's it going? It's Nick Campbell. We're here, Rhythm and Wit, with Dave and Nick. Well, introduce my co-host here, Mr. David Steele. Say hi to the peoples. All right. Yeah. Good deal. And we've got our first time guest in a hotel room.
In a hotel room.
Mr. Leo Mendes, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, you look good.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people you have coming by, but if you're going to have people coming in and out for about an hour at a time, they're going to start wondering things about you.
Yeah. How much money are they making?
Right. We need a cut. Yeah. The hotel manager's going to be like, you got to cut me in on this, otherwise
you can
Tulsa
get a turn.
PD's coming.
Tulsa.
Or the mob, the Tulsa Mafia.
Yeah. Well, I think Tulsa's got a lot more to worry about than us.
Yeah,
you know?
Cutting in on my territory.
Yeah. So what's been, man, I want to talk to you about your set last night at Blue Whale Comedy Fest. Yeah.
Sound Pony. It was amazing. That was super fun. Lots of people there. I definitely felt like the older gentleman in the place.
Did you?
Yeah, there wasn't.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of gray hairs in there, right?
You're right. I didn't think about that until you said that. There's a lot of young, I mean, everyone was pretty young, honestly, probably in their
20s. It's a younger crowd,
Yeah. Yeah, but you did really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Man. Great. You did all the hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, you know, I had a set that I wanted to do, and I think I got most of that out, but there was a lot of freestyling going on that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
You know, things that just came to mind or whatnot.
Kind of like out of the bag of stuff you already have.
Out of the bag or you know, a few tags. I haven't... I didn't record it. That's the only thing.
Oh,
so, like, I didn't record it, so I'd like to watch the tape. I record everything generally, but last night I just wanted to chill and hang out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But normally, like, when I get home, I'm really uptight about it. Like, I've got to watch it, and I've got to understand what words I've used and change the verbiage. And
I've noticed that you're very scholarly about your approach
about
to comedy. Well, I mean.
As far as the level of
diligent,
diligent academic, scholarly implies a level,
like
a level of intelligence.
I was trying to give you some gravitas.
Well, I appreciate but I'll take what's due.
Yeah, all right, touche. But yeah, man, you look good up there. You look comfortable.
Thanks.
Yeah, how'd you get prepared? What'd you do?
I mean, I the set that I went with was just something that it's one of my favorites. It's a subject that's a favorite to me. It's, you know, talking about Golden Corrals and strip clubs.
Yeah.
And I know Golden Corrals, but I don't know strip clubs. But I think that's a favorite bit of mine. I love it. And it's interesting. I think it grabs the crowd because they just don't believe that I've never been to a strip club.
Yeah.
So. They're like a guy like
or
this.
Just most men, even.
Right, most men, right.
Yeah.
Like, right.
Most men I've probably been to at least once or twice.
Yeah. But it's You know, and that's the thing is, it's just I joke about it being like a golden corral, but really, it's weird. Dancing is weird to me. That's like probably the biggest thing. Is just human beings hear a beat and then they're just like, hey, let's move around. And I don't know why. It's always been like, that is odd. That is an odd behavior.
So is dancing specifically something you find odd just in general? And then whenever you add naked to it?
When you add a naked person to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they've got the little pasty X's over the.
Yeah. You're like, this is witchcraft.
I like when they use the X at least rather than just the round cover.
Yeah.
Because X marks the spot. Yeah. So. It was super fun.
What is the cover? You mentioned tassels. You mentioned tassels.
You
mentioned the tassels.
Yeah.
Who sees that, sees the tassels and goes, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I needed, you know, like in like the fireworks, like you get the fireworks that spin real fast, you know what I'm saying? Or it's, you know.
I don't know, like for me personally, I don't need the tassel.
Yeah.
It's obviously an attention getter, but I'm sorry, a breast alone is enough to get my attention. So
that's just distracting from
the part that we want. Get the tassel out of the way. Yeah. It's like closing the drapes on it. No.
Yeah. What are you trying to do? Take off?
Yeah. So I think what I discovered this last week, and I didn't even discuss in the set because I haven't gone to strip club. I literally have never been to a gentleman's club ever. And I was thinking about my jokes. I'm constantly trying to write more on that subject.
Add to it.
Because I think there's so much undiscovered country there. But I was thinking, you know, I think the reason I haven't gone to a strip club is probably because I would enjoy it as much as I enjoy the Golden Corral. And that's like, I was getting in deep. Know. Like, I was going deep into an emotion. And I'm like, every time I go to Golden Corral, I overeat. Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to do that at a strip club.
You don't want to find out what you'll do.
I mean, just it'd be expensive. That'd be the first thing. I can't imagine the cost.
Well, I don't know. I've never really gone to very many.
We went to like a bunch when we were like freshly 21, of course, just this experience. Like, what, you know, we always want curious about it, so. Yeah, I mean, I think I probably haven't been to one since I was 21 either. Yeah.
Well, we went in the Kindles. That was the first, you remember that one?
Yeah.
And that scared us.
That like, was we walked
back when it was Roadrunners?
Yeah,
Roadrunners. Yeah,
Roadrunners. Isn't that bad? Like, I know the names of the clothes strip clubs, but I've never been to one. Like,
that was one.
Yeah, Cinnamon used to work there. Yeah. She moved over to Night Trips.
I represented her.
Yeah. Right.
That was an experience. I remember going to Roadrunner / Kindles and being like, oh god, like
that's the one that we never went to. I never went to Red Dog, and that's kind of like you probably
haven't gone
go
either
there to experience, or at least that's kind of iconic.
That's a good you get a taste of OKC.
Have you seen the Red Dog documentary?
No, I didn't watch that.
There's a documentary on it.
I think it's on Hulu.
How long is it? Is it? I mean, is it fairly long?
Like an hour and a half.
It's on a professional site.
Like, oh yeah.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
But I think like anything that has to do with strip club is going to be pretty long.
Really, it doesn't take me that. I'd probably get through it in 3 minutes. You're welcome. What were we talking about? Strip clubs. Oh, dude, how long have you been working on that strip club bit specifically? Where did it start? How did it start?
It started with my very first set.
Really? That far back?
Mm-hmm.
What was its version?
I don't even remember the first line, but I remember it was in my first set, something about me not going to strip clubs.
Yeah.
But it was a completely different version from where it is now. I just remember that. I'd have to go back and look in my notes, but I quickly changed it realizing that something else got a better laugh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't compare it to a Golden Corral at first. You know, I just remember saying something about strip clubs because, you know, the one thing I did understand immediately was that I needed to try to talk more about me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a fact about me that was different from a lot of guys. It's like I literally have never been. And so I noticed the first time I said that in a showcase, I got gasps from generally women in the audience would gasp. And the guys would look at me, you know, doesn't he like girls?
No, really? You know? That's an interesting little pressure point to push.
Yeah, but yeah. That's the thing is there's an emotional response there. Yeah. And so, like, I like that. I like seeing an emotional response and then playing with that.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping, I mean, my goal with that bit is to take my external analysis of strip clubs out to, you know, 15, 20 minutes of material. So, yeah. But that's a lot of work. Yeah. So.
Well, you've been digging at it for a while.
And finding that 15 that's good. I mean, you could do 15 right. minutes on it, but it wouldn't be, you know, all the way through really good stuff. You'd have to find those pieces that really work.
Well, and I that's another aspect of stand up that I've beat myself up a lot in that I want it to send every statement, every punchline. I want it to send where it's just a killer. It's a killer. Yeah. It's a killer. And then I got to talk with Chris Titus that one time, and he was talking about, like, it's like a feather, and you run your setup. And then your punchline, and you get that feather in the air, and then you use tags to get it. You just let it float around a little bit, but don't let it hit the floor. And so you can use tags, and they don't have to be the funniest. And that's been a super helpful insight for me, because then I can allow myself to understand, like, you've got the laughter rolling, and then you can just pop it up a little bit with a little tag here or there. And it doesn't have to be anything great, you know, any tag that carries on that initial punchline, it's also an economy. I'm trying to remember who said it, but you spend 15 seconds to 45 seconds doing this setup and doing a punchline, and then so many comics just drop it off there.
Yeah.
And like, often when I'm watching other comedians, I'm like, well, you let that drop off, and I'm like, I want more. And so really marinating in a joke and trying to find all those tags is like, that's where the juice is. Yeah. And you don't have to send every tag, but they can be relatable and funny, and therefore you're using it rests upon the original setup and punchline, and you can just carry on.
Yeah, so. I think it was Jeff Foxworthy. He mentioned something about that.
Yeah, it may have been.
Where
yeah.
he was like, yeah, don't, or try to get more out of it, like you said. Because you'll get more laughs per minute that way.
Well, I mean, you don't buy a Toyota Corolla and drive it for 10,000 miles. You get 300,000 miles out of that Toyota. Yeah. Like, you're going to drive that thing forever.
And like you said, with that setup part of it, it's like, if you have jokes that require a certain amount of setup time, and you do that over and over and over, you're wasting a lot of time just setting up a new joke each time, instead of, like you said, using one setup and trying to stretch that out with more stuff. That's really
cool. Yeah, and when you're starting out too, if you can figure that out quickly, because if you're at the club and you got 4 minutes, you really use the time as wisely as you can by getting a setup and a punchline out, and then all of your tags can relate back, and therefore you don't have to begin again. And you're also not resetting the audience, you don't want them to really fall off into a quiet zone. You want to try to get to a rolling laughter where if there is a quiet moment, it's you speaking words that's getting to the next laugh. So
what's your longest joke with the longest set of tags, and how long is it?
I've probably got 7 to 8 minutes on the strip club now.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. But that's talking about strip clubs. I'm out in, like, I talk about the restaurants, like Hooters and Twin Peaks, which I've also never been to.
Oh, really?
No, I've never been there either. Like, I just don't want to go out for fast food when I got gourmet at home.
Yeah, that makes loses its power a little bit.
It's just not. Yeah, it tastes okay.
Yeah.
But
Have you met the guys that fall in love with the girls there, and they believe that they have a chance?
I've heard some interesting stories about people that think that the stripper's into them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I really like about. I've got that tag where I talk about, like, why would you want to go watch somebody work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because that's what the dancer's doing. They're working.
They don't care about you. They're just trying to make money.
when I'm at work, I'm not thinking about work. You know, I'm thinking about, like, I really need to get home and put in a load of laundry.
Yeah.
That's what the dancers are thinking about.
Yeah,
I really need to get home.
And all of their, you know, whatever all of their problem. Customers are thinking, I need to get home, put in a load.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, it's that fun angle of looking at it. You know, maybe from a perspective, trying to take other people's perspectives on things, or when I do a joke, ask myself, like, okay, well, who are the characters, but what would be another interesting character? Like, what if an alien walked into this, or what if a caveman walked into this?
Yeah.
You know.
What would their experience be?
Right.
Yeah, what would they give them instead of dollars?
Right.
Yeah.
But that's probably the longest, I'd say, strip club. I've got probably thousands and thousands of words written on law and law school and law experience and everything, but not everything's made it to the stage.
Yeah. That could be another one that you could do that long amount of time on, I'm sure, just having your experience.
Yeah. That. Yeah. That's, that's sometimes a little hard point because not everything in law is, most everything in law really sucks.
Yeah, it's not even.
And so,
and people might not relate to that as much.
I think enough Oklahomans would relate to my criminal law experience.
Yeah.
So,
for sure. But it's just but
that's probably half of my fans are former clients. So, no man.
Does the working in front of a jury translate
to the same thing?
Yeah.
Trying
it's
to
the
convince
same thing.
Them.
I remember my first open mic. I was intimidated. I was nervous just because it's normal. You're going on stage. You're the focal point. And I remember finishing, and I got some laughs, but I remember thinking, my gosh, that felt just like a jury trial. Mm-hmm. And so the next day, when I went for my second open mic, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this just like I would a trial.
Yeah,
I'm going to walk in, and that's the jury. The audience is the jury, and I've just got to convince them to see my point of view, which is this is funny.
That's basically what it is.
And so,
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing it again?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. And this is your first time submitting to Blue Well?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And what do you think? Okie Homies?
Oh, loved it.
That Sound Pony? Yeah.
That was an active crowd last night. They were there. They were invested. Mm-hmm. They wanted to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't pick your crowd really ever. And that's a skill you've got to learn, is to understand what you're walking into.
Mm-hmm.
But being halfway through the show, I got to watch other people, and I knew what was working. And I was like, my chosen jokes are going to go just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some things that I picked out of the bag that I was like, okay, I need to throw this up there because they'll eat that up.
That was good because you were kind of in the middle or maybe towards the end.
Yeah.
You definitely had enough time to think about what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And if comedians will make sure that they listen to the other sets. Yeah. If they've got somebody ahead of them, you should listen, hear what's hitting the audience. Because if you've got anything in a bag, then you could pull out. Then, because the goal is to make them laugh and make sure that they're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
You're a performer.
Yeah, I remember Brandon Killo told us when we had him on, he would like listen to people's conversations before the show even started, just to hear what they were talking about, to see what they were into or interested in.
Yeah.
So like, see if he had anything that he could pull that, you know, it's like, cause I think you can get a feel for the crowd like that. If you pay attention to who's in the audience and what type of people are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Sound Pony was rowdy.
Yeah,
it was rowdy, dude.
They were rowdy.
Yeah, but up front, they were all, it was attentive. Yeah. But even people in the back, they were standing up on the pew back there or the benches.
Yeah, I thought everyone was like, because that place was definitely loud. I mean, it could have been real loud and everybody's drinking. So that's always a problem with doing comedy in bars. But they were pretty respectful throughout, I'd say, 3/4 or more of the show. And
it was
then
good.
It kind of started getting hectic, or more, they got louder towards the end for sure.
Mm-hmm. $2 hams.
Yeah.
So I can see.
That's the answer. So
I
right
can
there.
See why.
There's a timer against you if beer is yeah. that cheap.
It's coming.
Then you've really got to wrangle that crowd.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's the only thing. Because I was telling Nick last night, too. I was like, man, I was like, if it was, I felt like towards maybe before, it was about 3 or 4 comics left. And I felt like I was done with the show by then. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is yeah. enough. It just of the time limit, I think. And it was a little, it went a little bit longer than I probably would like. But, I mean, other than that, everyone did amazing, though. I thought it was a really great show and a good showcase of so much talent
mm-hmm.
and people I've never seen before. So,
did you have awesome. Any favorites?
No, I think, like, you know, I got to listen and I got to hear a little bit, but I can't even, you know, it was, for me, it was such a blur,
yeah,
you know, and that's often my experience when I'm on a show with a number of other yeah, people is because yeah it's hard to recall. You're focused on making sure that you do your stuff, you know. I'm definitely listening enough to read the crowd and everything, mm-hmm. but I couldn't even tell you what anybody else's yeah. jokes really were last night, but yeah. But that's also been an interesting thing about comedy. Moving from an audience member to a comedian, a performer, is it looks different from this side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so even when I'm sitting at home, you know, I watched a special just last week with someone that I well respect, who's a very funny comedian, and I wasn't laughing.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't because he wasn't funny. It's just because I was analyzing everything that he was doing. And, you know, I was like, okay,
yeah.
well, that got a laugh. What, you know, how did he set that up?
Mm-hmm.
And I was disassembling everything kind of like a puzzle and trying to see how he was putting it together.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
that's more of what I'm looking at.
Do you find that often, like, whenever you do, you feel like since you started comedy, you've lost a little bit, not that you lost the appreciation, but you can't enjoy it as much as you used to?
I'm enjoying it a different way.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's like, I love laughing.
Yeah.
And you can still get me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do remember somebody got me real well last night. Mm-hmm. It was Susan Bird, I think was her name. I'll remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. She was great.
Yeah.
Like, and I cannot remember the bit, but I do remember laughing yeah. out loud at something that she said. I was like that, and I was clapping even,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is for nice. Me
yeah
a clap for you. No, but yeah, that's the thing, is I enjoyed it a different way now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's one of my favorite scientists, Richard Feynman, mm-hmm. and how he talks about what is beautiful. And he said that, you know, some people will look at a flower and they'll say, well, that's a beautiful flower. And he looks at it differently, though. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, well, this is a collection of cells,
yeah.
which the DNA structure has indicated that this is a leaf and this is a petal and this is a stem. This is chlorophyll, and there's protein synthesis occurring in there. And he's looking at it from the point of view of a scientist, mm-hmm. and it's still beautiful,
yeah.
but for different reasons than maybe the average mm-hmm. observer. And I think that's the way that I'm starting to look at comedy is, mm-hmm. yeah, you can still make me laugh. And I'm like, yeah, it's a beautiful rose,
mm-hmm.
but like, how is it made?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, looking deeper.
I love that.
It.
I love that analogy. That's a good
yeah.
one. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way about film. I love making movie, you know. I took a semester of film school and got into some of that, but that's a lot of people say, once you start to learn how they make movies, you can't really enjoy a movie the same way anymore. But it's like I feel very similar. Like, I enjoy it more. Like, I want to know, like, I want to think about, like, what it was really like in that room when they were shooting it, and what it really looked like, and like, just how, because it's like, you can do some amazing things with a camera and just
right.
make someone believe you're in space and it's just like in a closet or something. You know, it's like
yeah.
it's that simple sometimes. Or
yeah, I think it comes down to the more you know.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoy movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cinematography,
yeah.
acting,
mm-hmm.
color usage.
Yeah. So you're studying that too.
I love seeing that. I love the impressiveness of that. And so I think that's how I look at comedy. Mm-hmm. But like, when law school law school will dang near ruin you on some things, because like I think like when you're doing comedy and you hear somebody doing a joke, you can kind of see where they slipped up. Mm-hmm. You could see that the audience probably doesn't get onto that. Mm-hmm. And then in movies, there's a lot of movies that people watch, which I mean, they're okay, but they're probably not like the greatest written.
Yeah, the best shot. That's off. That's something right. that I do a lot. Is like try to analyze why a movie isn't good,
yeah.
or something like, or a movie like is good, but something's not. You know what's wrong with it? You know, why isn't it great? You know,
but yeah.
often it will be weird things like the writing or that or an actor or even the directing. Because it's like there'd be like brilliant actors that just are terrible in movies, and you're like, why is this person? But it's like, could be, there's so many other factors that go into it.
And that's the thing. I think you're studying it, mm-hmm. and you're looking at it from a filmmaker's yeah. perspective, and that's...
But it's like, I still love yeah. it. Like I said, I still love watching movies, and I can still get lost in movies and forget about that stuff if I
right.
don't care. You know, I think it's easy enough for me to switch between it if I want to. But I never thought yeah. about it with comedy in the same way. Just I've never, you know, I don't really look at comedy like that either. I mean, necessarily, so I don't practice comedy. But yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think you get into that that analysis. Law school ruined that for you. It's because I remember while I was in law school, I think we were studying torts at the time, which is, you know, injuries to another person, causes of action brought from your negligence or misconduct yeah. or whatever, something that's not a crime or a contract. And I had been studying that pretty intently, and I went at home to sit down with my kid, and we were watching a Mickey Mouse cartoon, and it's the one where he's in the garden working, and all I'm doing is sitting there saying, okay, well, you know what? Mickey left the pesticide on the sidewalk and Pluto hit it and it puffed, you know, pesticide into the air. I said, so Mickey is negligent in his placement of the pesticide, but also pesticide is an extremely dangerous product. And so there's probably some strict liability on the company that makes the pesticide to make sure there's a warning. Like, that's what law school did to me, is because I'm sitting there watching Mickey Mouse. And I'm breaking it down as to where I can sue Mickey Mouse. Not Disney, because they have yeah. money. But yeah. I was thinking, like Mickey Mouse is being negligent.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the same thing that, you know, I began to do with movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And if I saw, like, a continuity problem, like in The Hunt for Red October, I think it's, what is it, Baldwin's? He's got a lapel, and in, you know, one scene it's unbuttoned, and then they move away, and then back, and it's buttoned, and I'm like, it's the magic buttoning lapel. But it, like, you'll catch that more because that's what you're trained to do.
You're looking at details closely,
and the more that you do jokes, you know, you'll see where they're going. They're doing their setup, and you're getting to the punchline ahead of them, and that. Yeah, like, I'm kind of sad because I want to laugh out loud.
You want to have that experience in a way.
Like, before I ever did comedy, I was watching a Jim Gaffigan special with one of my kids, and I was laughing so hard that I fell out of the chair on the floor of the living room, and I was laughing and turning red and gasping. And my kid paused it, and she's like, "Daddy, Daddy, are you okay?"
I'm just happy.
I'm like, "Yes, I'm good. This is fine."
Yeah, I've never been better.
Never been better.
But I love that. That's probably now in her trauma bank.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like every time she sees Jim Gaffigan now, she recoils or winces.
Yeah.
You know,
goes for the oxygen.
Or if she just sees some pasty white dad at the mall that's slightly overweight, she's like, it's Jim.
Don't laugh.
You're right.
No, that's crazy, man. I never thought of it like that. Do you think that having that ability also allows you to kind of like find whenever something is really funny, you're like, oh, that's a good one. You know, like,
you can
helps you figure out what's real,
really
original.
You know, it's interesting because when I my first experience with comedy that I really remember that I really remember was a memory of being put to bed when I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I would hear the newscast in the living room. My mom and dad would be watching the news, and I would wait until I would hear the news go off. And I would hear the music start for the Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And I would crawl out of bed, and I would belly crawl across the dining room floor into the living room, and I'd peek around the couch, and I'd watch Johnny Carson deliver his monologue. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what he was talking about, but he would get the audience laughing so hard, and then he would start laughing. Yeah. And I loved that. And so my first experience with comedy wasn't necessarily the substance of it, but just this emotion of humor and elation that was tantalizing for me because I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And then later in life, I got to realize that they were talking about the news that my parents had just watched. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, that sucks. So.
But it's something about the interaction between, I think it's just such a beautiful, like, interaction between one person and a group of people and, like, getting, like, a group of people, like you said, on the same level as you. It's, like, incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And to do it quickly and entertaining.
Yes.
Where people want to watch you.
Right.
But it's like that's like the core of it. Like Johnny Carson's like just stand in front of people and just make them have a reaction to something.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Do you think you'd do another festival?
Oh, would you sign up for another one? Another festival.
Have you done any networking? Talk to anybody?
Oh, yeah, that's I've had a few meetings and stuff.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah,
I've got some things coming through.
I've got some things up my sleeves that I'm working on.
Are you planning on like hanging out tonight too?
I'll be here all day today. I'm going to go to the festivities tonight and probably stay up pretty late as long as they're doing it and observe the people who are far better than me at this and see what I can learn and understand from them. I'm not just the people that are more experienced, better than me, but even the newcomers to the to this are somebody that you can learn from. So I think back in Oklahoma City at an open mic this last week, I watched Jaden Rogers. I'll shout out to Jaden. Hey, dude, he did some thinking on his feet in an open mic that killed me. Like, I laughed so hard at his just improvisation with the situation, this kid running into the open mic and turning a light off and on. And running out. And apparently this kid's done that 2 weeks in a row. And Jaden just brought it into his act and worked with it. And it
was
like flawless.
Is it new mic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rainey's mic over there at OKC Improv. If you haven't gone to that, you need to go.
Yeah. Shout out Matt Rainey.
But I love seeing even the newer comics because you can learn something from everyone, you know. So... I hope to go learn some things tonight as well as more networking. I love that, you know, the festival is great because that's probably the biggest part of it is you get to meet other people. And I think the camaraderie with other comedians is essential because the world seems to be getting smaller.
Little box that we carry around.
Right. And so... getting to know people and knowing who they are and what they're doing and how you can help them and they can help you is important.
Well, it felt like a hang.
Yeah.
You know, you see people that you've seen before.
Right.
Shake hands, say what's up, watch them do some fun stuff.
Yeah.
I love this. I was telling Nick, I was like, this is kind of like it's just a big networking event where it's like every comic comes or, you know, a lot of comics come from all over this area and it's like almost like a comedy convention where you just gather and meet.
We are brought together by each other's butt jokes.
I think that's so awesome. And hopefully, I'm sure that it's like, I don't think there's too many comedy festivals, at least not around here. I'm sure there are in other states.
I think I think there needs to be more.
It's
just like with open mics.
Yeah.
You know, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
I want more. I think that there should be opportunities. There's plenty of comedians or people that wanting to be comedians or people that want to go up and try for the first time. And I think that I think that the more the merrier, and I think it makes it more fun and more challenging. And I think that having more open mics also tells the public, like, hey, this is an important form of expression that you need to pay attention to. So. Yeah.
The more people that believe in it, the more valid it is.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that bringing that up, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I mean, I think we're kind of just talking into the works, maybe doing a festival in OKC.
I would love to see a festival in Oklahoma City. I think that Oklahoma City is large enough to handle.
Yeah.
I think that we've got a really strong arts council in Oklahoma City, and I think that the leadership of Oklahoma City has an affection for the arts. And so I think that putting stand-up comedy on the same plane as the other performative works, as well as the other mediums of art, would be important.
We've already got Norman Music Festival. They got Dead Center Film Festival. You know, it's like, why isn't there a comedy festival? That's actually weird if you think about it, that there's not one.
Well, I mean,
I think that comedy, stand-up comedy, is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of arts.
Pretty much.
Because it's, I mean, it's an odd art form. Yeah. It's not like anything else. Everything else is practiced and prepared and then presented. And while we do practice and prepare, like,
it's a little bit different.
Understanding of whether this is something is determined when you have an audience and they either laugh or they don't. And so it's an odd art form. And I don't know that everybody's used to it, and it is also a relatively young art form.
Honestly, I think about that often because, I mean, I think about that as just like a human species. Like, this is the first time, well, not really. I mean, there's always been people that make other people laugh, I mean, for hundreds of years. But, like, on this kind of scale, like, people haven't been able to practice this craft like we can now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, of course, you had, you know, the, you know, back in the Greek and Roman times, you had the philosophers standing around talking and everything. And I guess you could say that because they definitely had quite a bit of humor in their works as well.
Shakespeare, but even writing the plays and all that too.
But getting to where we're at now, I think probably most recently relates to vaudeville, and I think where vaudeville went from, you know, music, song, and dance, and then you had people like Will Rogers, not Will Rogers. What am I thinking? Maybe it's Will Rogers.
It's Will Rogers.
Yeah,
he was interesting.
I think that the first time he did spoken word was because he had a rope and horse act, and I guess the trunk didn't show up to one of his shows.
So he
didn't have any of his ropes. So he couldn't do any of his rope tricks. And so he took the newspaper and went out and he said, I just read the news and people laughed at it. And I read it because he'd make a comment here or there. So that might be kind of the first form of modern. But really, I mean, this didn't really take off till the 70s.
Yeah, on that scale, absolutely. It's brand new. I mean, even filmmaking, I think about, it's like this about 100 years old or so. I mean, not that old. So, like, comedy, I didn't think about that, but it's very young in that sense of it being on a big scale where you can consume it on any level.
Yeah, and I don't think this is going away. I've seen a few comments lately about people, comedy's peaking. No.
People, I think you would worry about
it's not.
Cancelization or the what is it, like, censorship of that's a big thing with people in comics, but I don't think that's enough to stop.
I don't think that's going away. I think that society changes and no matter what, the world that you grew up in is gone. It's dead. The 70s are over. The 80s are over. I know that breaks probably a lot of people in my generation's heart, but I'm sorry. Wham broke up a long time ago. It's over. It's not coming back. George Michael's dead. But but that's the thing, is that, you know, it's like a stream of water, and at that point, that water that you're looking at that moment is now gone. It's downstream. And that's life, that's culture, and that's society. and you've got 8+ billion people on the planet now, and they come from all these different diverse backgrounds, and every single one of them is an individual that thinks their own way and everything. And so society's going to change, and it's going to – it's you're either going to adapt or you're going to go away.
Yeah. Well, I think it, and well, I mean, I think comedy is probably the most volatile art because it's the only one where you could start out and people can like really hate you for accidentally saying the wrong thing when you didn't know what you were saying.
Yeah.
You know, because you're truly, I mean, I feel like you're I'm starting to mess with like more sensitive stuff now just to try to give myself the opportunity to try some challenging things, you know? And what I've learned is like, oh, what do I really feel about this? Now let me express it. And then once you grind it against audience, you're like, oh, maybe I didn't really feel like that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and then you're like, well, maybe my opinion is there. And then you start kind of like looking at the world a little different, and you try to like, and it feels more like putting together something over time with a better understanding as you live through it and kind of mull it over.
It's like, as you have to learn how you really feel about something, like you have an idea about whatever it is, whatever topic, and you express that idea, and then people are like, ooh, we don't like that idea. And you're like, wait, maybe I shouldn't have that idea. I need to change that way of thinking, or, you know, whatever. Or it's like, that's not the way you should think about something.
Yeah. Well, as an example, my I started doing this bit because I've, you know, my son's half black. And I'm like, all right, well, what are the complications that you can run into as a white dad with a half black son? Mm-hmm. And that can get, you know, little... just saying that can like kind of be a little touchy. It's a little touchy for me, you know, because I think about it and hit those snags, but then I'm like, let's get past this. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the number one thing? I love my son, right?
Yeah.
And so as long as that's expressed, you know, but sometimes you'll say something like I did the other day. It was like, hey, I got a mixed race son. You know, I'm not bragging. You know, and then it's, but I said that in one place and it was like a laugh. And I said it in another place and they were like, ugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, what did we learn? You know, what was different here? And you just do that 100 times until you go, okay, I see. Like,
right.
Because you're like working that thought, mulling it over.
I mean, for me, it's interesting. If you're going, oh, I want to know why.
Yeah, why are you going up?
I want to go, why? I want to know why. Because is it truly my emotion that I expressed? Or is it how you received and defined my emotion through your experience and definition of the world? Because we want to say that the world is this, but really what the world is what we have defined it as through our experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're walking around talking about things and saying, you know, that McDonald's fries are good because they're salty. Mm-hmm. Well, what I think is salty is probably going to be different from you, what you think is salty, versus like the eggs I had at the hotel this morning, which had absolutely no salt because I guess I'm staying at the old people hotel or something. Or the white people hotel. And there's like salt, that's too spicy. I don't know. But everybody's having a different experience.
Yeah.
And the thing is we won't know anything about each other's experience unless somebody starts expressing their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like that experience that I've had, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're free to tell me about that. But that's going to further inform my experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the man I was a year ago or 5 years ago or 2 decades ago. I'm evolving.
Yeah.
I'm having an experience. So I'm going to try to tell that as best as I can on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And people are free to interpret it as they want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, if it upsets you, I would rather you come educate me because I'm open to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I think something's funny and you think that's icky, then I could probably see it from your point of view because I'm sure there's something about it that you think is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like you can tap into that with, you know.
Well, if it makes you laugh, really, when I tell a joke, I'm telling you that because I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I think that a strip club is just like a Golden Corral. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think my reaction to a Golden Corral is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to tell you about that.
I think at the bones of it, of telling a joke. I think it's a way for you to go, are you like me? You know?
It's a question almost.
Like, yeah, you're like, because it does kind of come, it ends with a, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're like,
because it's like, yeah, you I'll say do one, something and then you're
I'll
like,
do one right now. I'll do one right now with you.
Hit me.
All right? I'll do one right now with you. We're both big guys, right? Dave might not understand this, right? But we got some stretch marks.
Oh, definitely.
Right? So already, if I tell a stretch mark joke, you're just a little bit away from it. Yeah. But how can I make that association with you? Mm-hmm. What's your stretch marks? Yeah. What's your physicality? You know, maybe it's like, so if you can associate it or get them in a position where they're like, oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, like, or they feel your emotion or attitude that you're presenting in it, where it's like, I get embarrassed. And they're like, ooh, I feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
I've been embarrassed before. Right. And so if you can kind of like.
You kind of have to tie it to, take it away from the specifics and tie it to what's underneath that. Mm-hmm. And then anyone can understand it to that level, at least. Like, everyone's been embarrassed before. You know, like, so if you can explain that's what how you feel about stretch marks, then anyone can understand.
Well, then that's what we do with the sun joke with the my kids half black. It's like, hey man, it's weird being a dad in this situation because I don't know. I don't have that hair. Mm-hmm. I only just use one shampoo for everything, you know?
Right.
And he doesn't. His takes an hour every night, you know? He goes through a whole thing. And I didn't have that life. Mm-hmm. I was playing video games.
Yeah.
No. And that's the thing, is you're experiencing different cultures or different ethnicities or whatnot. You know, I remember I was a grown man the first time I had collard greens. I went to a barbecue place and that, you know, what sides do you want? And I was like, well, what sides do you have? And they mentioned collard greens. And I said, well, serve me up some of those. I've never had them before. And I got the meal to go. And I remember I was sitting in that park across from the Oklahoma City Zoo. And I ate them. And I had an emotional experience where I was like, oh, I've been missing out.
Oh, really?
Like, I've been missing out. And that really informed my anger at people who had kept me from experiencing collard greens.
Yeah.
And now, every time I go. But that's the thing. Is like, I haven't had this experience. Now I'm having it.
Mm-hmm.
I have an emotion about it. And while mine was like collard greens, you know...
how could you associate that to somebody else with something that they're missing on the other side?
So
what are black people missing that they don't get?
I don't know.
Like, I mean, that could be the balancing the joke, you know, finding that relationship and trying to find like, okay, well, here's the commonality.
Right.
You know, it's really just like, hey, do you like me? I like you.
But I think, you know, just that actual, cause like I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just too emotional of a guy, but like I did, I had like a tear well up in my eye.
Oh, really?
After,
well, I'm a fat guy too, so I mean, I love food.
I'm strong.
And if I so find a move food that I haven't been experiencing, that's an emotional experience for me. Like, come on.
Are you still mad at your parents?
No, like I kind of, you know. Well, that's also like...
Bland-ass rice?
I had an experience once when I was out. I was in Lubbock, Texas, and the rest of the family went out. It was Christmas Eve. They went out Christmas shopping, and I was at home, and there was cable TV there, which we didn't have. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm gonna lay back and watch some cable TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm flipping around, and I see on CMT they were doing a Dukes of Hazzard marathon.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, man. When I was a kid, Dukes of Hazzard was the shit. Like, that was the show to watch. It was the coolest thing. I was like, I'm going to watch the Dukes of Hazzard. I got 5 minutes into that, and I called my dad on the phone, and I'm like, this was child abuse. Why did you let me watch that show? Not just the fact that they had the flag on top of the car and what that represents, but the fact that the show sucked so bad.
It was very...
Like, I enjoyed this as a kid. You could have pulled me out of that and introduced me to cinema or something.
There's plenty of it.
But no, I grew up thinking that show was cool until I was an adult man.
Yeah. And you don't anymore. You're done with it.
No, like, what? how did that even get made? You know, and they're like, well, it's the good old boys, never meaning no harm. They were being chased by the cops continually. They were literally breaking the law. I think the uncle guy, yeah. Uncle Jesse, he was like the sage, the wise man of the group, and he was a moonshiner. Yeah. Like, the guy was a felon, and they were going to him for advice.
I think law ruined Starsky and Hutch for you. I think or who was it? What was it? Dukes of Hazzard. Starsky and Hutch?
Starsky and Hutch, man. That was another TV one? Show.
Okay, yeah. I know they remade that with the Owen brother. And
I saw that.
They've remade everything. They've remade everything.
Is it cool seeing your childhood again?
Hazard a movie.
Yeah. No, I haven't. I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine. I'm good. There are some things in life that you shouldn't experience, and remakes of really shitty TV shows from the 80s is probably one that you should just skip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I agree. You know what I want to see remade again? Night at the Roxbury. I think that could be done well again, but there's no done well again. Yeah, club
that was done well. You done know, well again.
Yeah. Well, look, if we're redoing stuff, you know what I'm saying? Let's redo it. Like, it would be Night at the Roxbury and their kids.
You could raise Stanley Kubrick from the dead, and ask him to shoot that movie. And it wouldn't be any better. Like, the base subject material has to be something worthy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Corky Romano, or whoever. What's his name? You know, but
Chris
Kattan. Yeah.
No, I make fun of that, but like, he's making more coin than I am. Yeah. So good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Carrying your SNL characters out until they are absolutely dead. Yeah. Like, you think Disney's milking characters. Yeah. Lorne Michaels milks characters until they are gone. Lauren, I do want a job if you ever. Yeah. That's not personal, buddy. That's business.
Well, you got a favorite old time? Well, I guess, is that considered old time? Night at Roxbury's old time.
It's like, yeah, they're classic.
Jesus. It's a classic. Yeah, it's classic. Well, do you have one of your favorites?
Favorites?
Yeah, favorites.
I don't have a favorite of hardly anything.
No? Do you have a few likes? Like, top likes?
It's painful for me to even come down and whittle something down, because I was of the, like, I was even of the pre-Blockbuster generation. So, you know, I remember when VHS tapes came out, and when we finally got a VHS player, a Hollywood Video, back when just a hole in the wall, opened up down the street, and the guy who worked there was a friend of a girl that was in my sister's class, and he would give me free movie rentals all the time. So I'd go over there like on a Friday after school, and I would get like 8 tapes of movies. So I have seen so many movies in my life, because I didn't have any other life. It was skateboarding or reading stupid books or watching movies, and that was my youth. And so it's very hard for me to whittle it down to, you know, Peter Sellers. I'll go to an emotional level. For me, was my dad is the one who really introduced me to comedy. And my dad enjoyed Peter Sellers and the Pink Panther movies from back in the day.
Yeah.
And while some of those were stinkers, Sellers was an unbelievable actor and a comedic actor. Mm-hmm. And a way that he could deliver lines. And I would highly suggest Being There. It's a movie called Being There with Peter Sellers, and it's an unbelievable movie. I think it's 1978, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, got Shirley MacLaine in it and a few other actors. But he plays Chauncey Gardner is his character. And he is a gardener that works at this wealthy man's house, and he is mentally handicapped, and come to find out that he is the heir to the wealthy man. He's the child to the wealthy man. He's a grown man. The wealthy man dies. The lawyers come, as lawyers do, and they kick him out, and they basically put him out on the street. Well, he's not quite all there. But the way he talks, everybody thinks that he is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very good movie for talking about what society is, even though, I mean, this is a movie from the 70s. Mm-hmm. But Peter Sellers plays kind of a straight. He plays he's not trying to be funny, mm-hmm. but it's everybody else's reaction yeah. to him that makes it a riot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? And so he's kind of playing the straight man in the situation?
Yeah, he's playing the straight man, but he is the laugh relief, mm-hmm. yeah. which is an interesting way to position it, because everybody else around him's like, oh what did you just say? And he's making no sense. He is just yeah. talking about what he knows, which is gardening. He gets the name Chancey Gardner because he's Chance the Gardener, and that's all he knows he is. Yeah. So everybody's like, Chancey Gardner.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he becomes famous, television famous in the movie. Yeah. So, and I'm not going to give any more away from that.
Yeah. I'm interested in checking
it out. Yeah,
that's
no
a
idea.
Great film. But, I mean, I love comedy films, mm. yes. But... I'm a sucker for a very good drama. Lawrence of Arabia, unbelievably shot. You got to understand the difference between, I think, 60 millimeter and 75 millimeter shooting styles. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much out there. I can't narrow it down. I have a lot of movies that I own that I will watch again and again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I figured you were like, you've got a whole server downloaded full of stuff.
Yeah, I have a little media server.
Get them, guys. No.
It's legal.
Yeah. It's beautiful, man. I enjoy that about you. You always have something cool to say about movies. We do write together. Just want to let everybody know that on occasion we do. Yeah.
We're friends.
Yeah. I didn't want anybody to know. But but no. But we've been writing together for a little while. Something I did want to kind of go back to was like how I've noticed you really do dive and get more out of bits than I've seen anybody else locally do. As far as like the strip club,
Thank
you kind
you.
Of come back to it. You kind of add more. You mull around with it. That just come up to you? Are you working naturally at it? Is you kind of mulling through it as you go through the day? Do you pick up stuff from other people? Do you take tags and stuff?
Oh, I'll definitely take tags.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're ever watching my show, I don't care who you are. If you think that you've got a tag, I'll hear it. I'm not ever going to be at the point where I'm like, you know, I want to know your experience. You know, it's funny because like I have that chocolate fountain tag,
mm-hmm.
you know, where things you'll see at a Golden Corral that you will probably see at a strip club is one, every time I go to a Golden Corral, there's always some guy with his meat on the table and there's always some guy trying to stick his fingers in the chocolate fountain. That tag literally came from one of my daughter's boyfriends. We were sitting around the fire pit in the backyard. And the boyfriends had come over, and we're sitting there doing s'mores or something. It's a good, wholesome American family. And I didn't have to go into any detail about the joke. I just asked them. I was like, hey, did any of y'all ever eat at Golden Corral? And this boy that was over was like, oh, yeah, man, I was there last week. And it was the grossest thing. It was the grossest thing. There was a guy up there, and he kept putting his finger in the chocolate fountain. And I was like, thank you. Our evening is done. I have exactly what I need. Yeah. That right there was enough.
It was worth the s'mores.
But so, like, you know, it's gathering things from experience. But I'll ask... It's kind of, I guess, like a legal analysis is, you know, what else do I need to know about this experience, or what else have I experienced in this, or what might I experience in this? But I feel that joke, while it gets great laughs, I feel it's kind of in the kiddie pool area of humor, mm-hmm. at least in my, I'm trying to get it to the Olympic freestyle.
It's kind
You're
of
looking for a bigger pop.
It's an interesting, you know, thing that you. I mean, you know, it's funny because it's a good visual image. Too,
yes,
but it,
right.
Yeah, you're right. I think it is kind of a low hanging fruit, or in a way. I mean, you know, but I think it's great, and you know,
I love the imagery.
Yeah,
no, and that's the thing is like I think that like I love low hanging fruit, mm-hmm. and that's great. I just don't want anybody else to be doing that.
Yeah,
same. I don't want them picking the same fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but. And so that's why I'm trying to constantly elevate it.
Yeah.
And I think getting it to where I can go for 15 minutes mm-hmm. on that topic is where I, you know, that would be great because then I'm going to get deeper into it. Yeah. But asking about, you know, what's driving me, I kind of have a rule with every premise that I have is that I want to be able to do 5 minutes on that premise.
Oh, okay.
And it's specifically because of, like I was talking about economy earlier, is I don't want to go up and do 30 seconds to 45 seconds setup for one punchline mm-hmm. and then go on to another subject.
Again.
So you've already got the audience informed mm-hmm. and you've already got them laughing. So use that, you know. It's just like creating a more efficient automobile engine is, you know, you're always trying to get more miles per gallon out of that car
yeah.
because gas is expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, a setup is expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like use the economy of words and take your time and spend it well. And so every premise I have, I'm telling myself, really, if you want to do that premise at a show or a showcase or whatever, you've got to do 5 minutes on it. So, mm-hmm. and to do 5 minutes on a premise and it is to go through probably 20 or 30 minutes of stuff that is crap or is too low hanging mm-hmm. or whatever to try to get to something that's intelligent, but that's authentically me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could tell things, which is a pretty general joke. And I think I have enough of that. And I want to make sure I either marry those jokes into something more authentically Leo
mm-hmm.
or dispose of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
how do you once you get up there and you say it, is that when you're like, oh, that didn't feel good and like saying that? Or do you filter it before you even get up there?
No, I filter it before I get up there. Generally.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that's my anxiousness and my, I don't want to call it ADHD because I'm not like, I'd be self-diagnosing and maybe that's the case, but like I will toil over something.
It's probably like an obsession. I have that a lot. I get obsessed over like a project or something and I just can't, you know, I get hyper-focused on that thing. But I wouldn't say I have ADHD at all. I mean, like,
right.
Like it's very.
Yeah, I don't want like to give it a negative connotation.
It's something about like this kind of fixation or this thing
that
you can get into.
Like I love. Similar. There are places on earth I love to go. You know, I like going to the mountains mm-hmm. and I like to go to the beach. I love to go anywhere that my wife is.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite place on earth is inside my head.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so if you see me sitting in the corner, which, you know, open mics, I try to be very personable mm-hmm. and open, but you see me sitting in the corner open mic, that's because I'm in my brain somewhere or at home. It drove my kids crazy when they'd go, like, for law. I would drive out to the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, to go to court. And sometimes they would accompany me on these rides. And they were like, Dad, we've been driving for an hour and a half without the music. Can we turn the radio on, please? And I'm like, no. Like, this is my windshield time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, some of my favorite time to write is when I'm driving.
Yeah.
Or when I can get into a meditative state mm-hmm. so that it's not like clearing my mind, but it's just being super focused. Mm-hmm. And I love that for everything I've ever done, for education or for law. You know, if I won your case, it was because I did that behind the wheel, driving in the middle of nowhere, thinking about your case.
Yeah, there's something definitely about driving that puts you in a weird, like, thinking mode. I do it with mm-hmm. I go on walks. I go and walk for like an hour and a half mm-hmm. and a nice day at the lake, and I just like get, you know, figure out all kinds of stuff.
It
helps you like just kind of solve problems even. I don't know, it's weird.
Well, I think if you're getting into a if you're in some sort of routine mm-hmm. whether it's walking or driving or some sort of exercise or anything, it almost gets you into a meditative state. But they say psychologically it takes 30 to 35 minutes for your creative brain to mm-hmm. kick in, because we are process animals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And our brain is very focused on tasks and things.
Like whatever problem
you have to solve. And now with, you know, with these things, with these things here, which I've got an alarm about to go off. I better shut that off. See, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
I picked it up and immediately. I'm like, ooh, look at that.
You gotta do something.
But for me, I have to put that away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to get myself to a place where I'm away and I'm just, you know, keep your hands and feet busy if you can't stop moving. Yeah. And maybe that's walking. Mm-hmm. But I love going into my head and thinking about things. And now I'm thinking about funny things rather than cases.
Those laws and, to do.
No, it's like a butt joke. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. I mean, I had a colonoscopy. I don't want to talk about, you know, I had another burglary client the other day. I want to talk about other stuff.
Yeah.
That's more fun.
Do you think it changes your perspective on how you perceive things too? Writing jokes all the time makes you look at something and go, ah, it's not that bad.
From the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, I'm thinking about jokes.
Nice.
And in my sleep, like I had a dream one night that I was floating the Illinois River with the family and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to go. I've got a show at Bricktown tonight. Mm-hmm. I've got to go. And so I race home and I get to Bricktown and I'm like, I don't have time. It's time for me to go on. And so I'm like, okay, all right. I don't even have a set. So I start to write some things on my hands and I go up on stage and I'm like, okay, first of all, you all probably want to know why I'm naked except for shorts. Because in my dream, that's like what, and, you know, which is probably a nervousness because I've got to always have my suit. And so I was nearly naked on stage, but I had all these notes on my hands so I could do a set. But in my dream, I had gone to the restroom and I had washed my hands because you should wash your hands after you go to the restroom. There's a couple comedians I could probably teach that to. But and so it had faded a little bit. And so I went on stage and I was like, hey, a little secret is that sometimes comedians will write notes on their hand. Just a little trade secret. And if I don't figure out what one ga mulk is before I get home, my wife's going to be angry. And in my dream, it killed.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I wonder. And I woke up and I wrote it down and I went and did it and it works. It worked. And I was like, my brain did something good for once. In my dream, it wasn't just trying to scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
My brain was having a dream that I could use.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I think it makes sense in a way because at this point, like you said, you're always thinking of how to turn everything into a joke. Like, I mean, if you have an experience, like, how can this be a joke, you know? So it's like your brain is so used to doing that, even when you're sleeping and you have an experience in your dream. It's like, okay, well, I got to turn this into a joke. And you just do it. I think that's really cool to get to and to have that. I think I'm sure a lot of comedians don't do that and, you know, aren't like that. And just, you know, they're great comedians, but they don't spend all their time. Maybe they do. I don't know.
It's all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I had another dream that a prior employer called me up and they were like, hey, we want you back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, I'll tell you what, this is the money I want. And here's some other conditions that I want. I said, if we can make this work, then I'll come back. And the manager was like, okay. And they flipped the paper over and they were like, oh, I'm sorry, but it says here that you're not eligible for rehire. And I'm like, that's my brain. My brain is hurting me. My brain did that to me. And the sad thing is, like, my brain knew where it was going before it told my brain to think it and put it in my dream. We have no idea how the human brain works, do we? Because my brain's thinking that up. And I want to do that on stage. I'm working that out. But Pete Holmes has a I thought that, and I had that experience with that dream. And then I'm like, Pete has a little thing where he's talking about how he's like, Pete's brain thinks that. But yeah, I think that's hilarious. And so that's the thing, is even when I have a startling or scary experience in life, there's a point where, like, we can laugh about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's much faster for me now, is because I can get a laugh out of this.
Yeah. Well, what do you got going on? What's coming up next? What's on the horizon?
Let's see. September 6th is Prohibition Lounge in Norman.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Going to be Andrew Rose, and I believe we've got Andrew Rose, and we've got Brennan Killow. And a couple others on that show, and that'll be fun. I haven't been down there yet.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been in there. I know. I mean, it's right on Main Street, isn't it? In Norman.
I hate to say.
I think it is.
I haven't been down there yet.
I love Main Street. It's like they also have the Legally Brewed brewery.
Oh, Legally Brewed is amazing. If you haven't been there, because Wampus Reynolds has his Wednesday show there. My buddy Tracy and some friends started that place, and it's a fine establishment.
Yeah, I was really curious. I know it has some kind of connection to law.
They're lawyers.
They're lawyers.
I think they're trying to get out of law, like most lawyers are. I'm just guessing, but
if I know lawyers,
it's a very nice place. They've got a really dolled up down there, and it's a great experience.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's close to that, though.
Okay.
It's like a few doors down, I'm sure.
I have to check that out. I can't wait to go and see that. So, yeah, I've got that. And then I didn't do a lot this summer because we had I had a wedding.
Yeah.
Which
you got married.
You guys
got married. We were both there. Yeah.
I got married.
It was awesome.
No.
It was a great time.
My gosh, dude. Like,
that was the first time I officiated a wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might be the last.
Yeah. Was it scary?
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realized that. Well, after I talked to a couple guys that actually officiate weddings, and I was like, oh, I should have had these conversations before, just for like little things that I should have, because I didn't know what I was doing.
It was perfect.
But it felt good.
No, it was perfect.
It felt good. Oh, okay.
No, it was, perfect.
Dude. I loved it. Yeah.
It was perfect.
Well, it's my day.
It wasn't just because we catered Monterey Jack's on Air Depot, Midwest City.
There you go.
Great Mexican food, good price.
Yeah.
Little plug Monterey for them Jack's. Because they gave us a great deal on that food because I knew you were going to be there eating. And I was like, I'm going to need a lot.
Yeah,
I need a lot.
Definitely.
So,
but, sorry about the bathroom.
Yeah. No, but it was a really good event.
Awesome.
It was a good event. We had a great
turnout.
Wonderful turnout.
That is important at a wedding, though, is the turnout.
It was unbelievably impressive on me. Well, because I was getting married. Mm-hmm. But I am a plug from my wife, Allison. I have totally scored. Mm-hmm. So that's all I can say about that. Unbelievable woman who pushes me in all the ways. Usually because I'm fat and I get tired. But no, she pushes me in comedy, actually, and is my number one fan. So if you think you're my number one fan, sorry, that slot is filled. That's my wife.
Well, it's fresh. But, it'll change.
It's been a busy summer, so we had the wedding, and then we had a family trip to Pensacola Beach, which was also life-altering for me because my favorite place is the mountains. But I have a new place that I love, which is Pensacola Beach. That's Allison's favorite place. And then for our honeymoon, we went up to a little bitty, itty-bitty town called Garfield, Colorado, which has 25 residents. And that's where my grandpa built some cabins, and we stayed there for a week.
Yeah.
And then we got home from that. We were home for a couple weeks, and then we went and floated the Illinois River for a weekend. We partied this summer.
Yeah.
It was insane.
What inspired that? You guys were like, we're just going to have a bunch of fun this summer.
Well, I mean, we wanted to do the wedding. Mm-hmm. We had scheduled that, and that was our date, and we were going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to do that. And then she's taken the kids to Pensacola Beach just about every year. They rarely miss on her own. Mm-hmm. And that was her favorite place.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to see that and experience it, you know, with her and from her perspective. And so we went and did that. And then she had actually suggested Colorado. She had been up there once before. We took a little family vacation last year, mm-hmm. but this time she and I went alone, which was an unbelievable experience mm-hmm. to be without kids. And I think that was her first time being away that far for that long without any of her kids, which was a new experience for her. But we had a blast up there. It just was an absolute blast. Yeah, and then floating the river is kind of something they've done. I've done a few times before, but mm-hmm. we're like, we need one more hurrah before
definitely like school incorporating starts. Just being, you know, starting your new traditions together, or, you know,
can
you being involved with their tradition, going to the beach now, and it's like, hopefully you can do that every year with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and, but now, yeah, but that's, I love that because you said she loves the beach and then you love the mountains. So you did both.
Right.
Yeah. What I like about both of you is that you have this very parental feel to you. Like, Allison, definitely, because she's like an educator, you know, but also she has, like, her kids love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's a beautiful
thing. She's cool.
Yeah, she is cool.
That's the thing. Yeah. She is super cool. Like, but, she's extremely intelligent. Mm-hmm. And she's a very good educator, and she's a very good communicator, an amazing negotiator, and I love how she talks to me, because I've seen her do it to other people too, and it's just her skill and training and experience. Yeah. But I can get a little rambunctious in my thought, and maybe a little cranky and angry. And she's really good at putting it into perspective or showing me an angle that I hadn't thought of. And I'm like, that's like a really good person for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's a great partner in that way as well. But yeah, she's great with her kids, and her kids love her because she's cool.
Yeah.
But generally people adore her, but she's very nice too. So.
Well, I'm saying that because you also are somewhat of like a papa in the comedian
kind of group. Interesting.
Yeah, which is very kind, open, welcoming. You run standupmics.com, which is pretty much the go-to place if you want to see what mics are happening in Oklahoma. And it's an asset. Mm-hmm. You know, you hand that out. You kind of do this voluntarily, you know, and then help people along like me when I first started, you know.
Now that you did that mic at Paramount on Thursdays, like earlier this year, you were down. Are you still doing that? The kind of workshop mic?
So that, I think Christy was running that mic and maybe Ben ran it for a little bit, but that was a good workshop.
You were hosting.
Oh, yeah, I was hosting once or twice. Yeah, I would host. Yeah, I like hosting mics. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I love that mic in particular because it was a cool little workshop, and I always felt like that it was a good place for you to be because it's like you were kind of helping guide these, you know, people's questions about comedy.
Well, I don't pretend to know stand-up comedy as well as people have been around for, you know, decade or greater. But I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've been watching it, like I said, since I was quite young. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
I love talking shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I love talking, you know, the philosophy of stand-up comedy. I love talking the philosophy of anything. But this is my passion. This is the one, you know. I'll gladly talk, you know, human philosophy or religion or politics or science or whatever, because I'm very interested in all of those things. And I think that helps inform comedy as well. But when you want to talk joke structure or wording or, you know, performance or how to present this joke, I love talking that, and I love seeing your work. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is I hosting JJ's Alley for 3 years now. I've seen a lot of people come in and try and give up, mm-hmm. and then I've seen a lot of people stick around and really develop. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are people who started comedy after me that are now opening for visiting comedians and stuff, for touring comics, national headliners. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing is like, I am I am just another dude. I'm just another guy. I just have a perspective. And if you don't like it, okay, that's cool. You can just not use something that I think.
I think the workshop stuff is really cool. I think I'd like to see you do that again or do a new start a new mic just focused on that. Because I think that's really helpful for people.
I'll let somebody do that.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I'll let somebody do that. That's
maybe
great.
Maybe in down the line after you have three or four more years, you'll have some more.
Yeah, I ran two mics for a while.
Yeah.
And running one open mic, it's pretty unforgiving. It's difficult. There's a lot of back end on it, and it's not as fun as writing jokes and performing them. Sure. But there is an enjoyment. I like thinking on my feet. If somebody, people get up there and bomb, you're going to bomb. And you're running a show, and if there's audience there, you've got to try to bring it back up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like thinking on my feet and trying to think of something that that gets the crowd reinvigorated or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to do. So
yeah, dude. Well, tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, MendesComedy.com. It's my website. Mm-hmm. You can get all my socials on there on Linktree as well. Mendes Comedy. Everything's Mendes Comedy.
Yeah.
Everything is Mendes Comedy. Yeah. All one word. You can search for it. Unless you want to give me money on Cash App, then that's Leo Mendes Comedy. With the Cash App sign, Leo Mendes Comedy. And you can give me money at any time.
Yeah.
I take it in bills, electronic, coins, crypto.
Bitcoin,
Yeah, dude.
Iraqi dinars.
Yeah. He's selling legal advice as well.
Yeah.
Where you saying $75 for three questions?
Yeah, there's no discounts. I'm not discounting this because nobody's discounting my student loans. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I would love to give you free legal advice, and that's one of the most annoying things to ever get. Hey, I got a quick question. Yeah. No, you don't have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 3 years to go to law school. I read 65,000 pages of case law, treatises. Books studied. I took 3 months to study for the bar exam, which took me 2 days. 16 essay questions, was 8 books of at least 4 to 5 pages written, 400 multiple choice questions just to pass the bar so I could answer your damn question. So, no, it's not a quick question.
Yeah.
It's a very expensive question.
Yeah.
You just want me to answer it for free, and I'll answer it for free. But one day I will call upon you for a favor to return to the Godfather, a favor that I ask upon you.
I ask about my fence line one time, dude.
That's it.
One time. But thanks for coming, man.
Yeah,
we love you, dude. Thanks for everything. And it's about time we got you on here. Thanks for coming in this hotel room with all these cameras.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is great. So.
And we're about to go have some fun at White Whale.
Blue Whale.
This is my first day. It's my first day.
Okay,
I'm tired. We
gotta
eat. We gotta eat
over here. He is hunting.
I'm dreaming about
white
Empire
whale.
Pizza right now.
There you go. All
right.
All right. White Whale. Jesus. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right.